Hello and welcome to episode the 237th of the Internet's one and only podcast about comic books. You are listening to the Comics Podcast, the sultry, beautiful tones of the Comics Podcast. I'm your host, Jean-Luc, joined, as always, by my good friends. Chad's here.
I accidentally super glued coffee grounds to my hands.
Hell yeah, brother. Alex is here.
Accidentally played a round of mini golf this morning.
Hell yeah, brother. And Emily is here.
I didn't do anything on accident today.
Hell yeah, brother. So we're all here. I kind of want to hear that how you super glue coffee grounds to your hands. That doesn't seem very doable, especially by accident.
So I was trying to do some homemade texture paint for my new branch of miniatures that I want to paint so I could do the bases. You make them stand on, like, you know, dirt and gravel and stuff. And I watched a YouTube video and I was like, oh, if you need to do that, just mix regular acrylic with coffee grounds. And I was like, I have plenty of coffee grounds. I make coffee all the time now. I have a coffee maker I really like. So I did that. But I couldn't get it to stick very well. And I was like, oh, you know what's really sticky is super glue. And I still got some of that.
I just love the thought.
It was a mess. I'm glad I did it in the basement and not in my room.
Did someone make a mess? Like,
I made a wee bit of a mess, but it, you know what? It worked, I think. I'm waiting for everything to dry, and if they stick, I get to do the other five characters. But it's going to look really fucking sweet if this works. Like, so much better. Why didn't I do fucking texture paint for my other minis? Their bases are so boring.
Damn. You live and learn, Chadley.
You do.
But, and maybe when you add to them, you won't get coffee grounds stuck on your hands.
I'm
maybe
afraid
you'll
to...
you'll have learned.
Do anything to the orcs, because their feet are really big, and chipping them off their base to do, like, a texture on there, it just seems like I would... I put so much work into them, I can't break them.
Hmm.
I just can't. There was so many hours into those stupid things.
Sounds like it's time to buy more minis.
No, I haven't finished painting the Necrons yet. I haven't started painting the Necrons yet, which have been cursed. I mean, we've been over this, but I've lost a base. I've got super glue on my monitor. I've cut my monitor with a knife. I accidentally built some of them wrong, and so they don't quite fit together very well, but it's like, well, I guess they're undead robots from the future. It's okay if they look dented. But that was not on purpose.
You want to make it feel lived in, you know? Want to give it a vibe. So
yeah.
I feel like fucking up your undead robots a little bit is probably where you want to be.
A nice custom.
I'm not going to drill out the gun barrels because at this point I know I will destroy them. I'm just gonna save that for ones with bigger guns. These ones have very thin barrels.
I was gonna say that one. That sounds like way too fine a process to ever want to attempt.
I did it with the orcs, but I used a power drill. And looking back, that was an awful idea, and I could have done some serious damage to them. But other than a couple of them not being super centered, it worked.
Fair enough.
Like, live and learn, like Emily said.
She did say that.
I think Emily said that.
She did,
I did say that.
Well said, Emily.
I was paying attention.
Wow.
That's a first.
Well, at least one of us was.
What, were you not paying attention to Chad talking about his minis?
I was absolutely paying attention. I don't know what you're talking about, John.
What does minis stand for, Emily?
Minnie Mouse.
You're right. Damn.
Oh.
See, I was there the whole time.
It kind of would be neat if Chad was just painting, like, Mickey and Minnie Mouse over and over again, but he was, like, calling them, like, orcs because he didn't know what a Minnie or Mickey Mouse was. And just, like, we look at it, and it's like, oh, it's Mickey Mouse. And he's like, yeah, the gun barrel's just not working, though. And I'm like, oh, that's his hand. But, okay.
I bet someone has done Disney-themed Warhammer.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
That'd be neat.
That absolutely exists.
Man, I gotta finish painting my Star Wars, guys.
Yeah, what the fuck, Alex?
Okay, like, I've reached the point where the AT-ST is right there, and I'm like, oh, man, I just don't want to screw this up. I mean, it's largely just gray paint, though. So, like,
yeah, I was going to say, the AT-ST seems really easy to paint. It's very monochromatic.
Yeah, it does, but there's...
But you could add, like, little blaster scarring to it, I guess, but it wouldn't take that much effort.
Yeah.
It is also now coming to my attention. Chad, do you want to describe what you've sent us.
Holy shit.
Oh,
what
sorry.
You blessed us with.
That middle
I
one
found
is just
a,
terrifying.
I found an image where someone decided to take some good old space marines for the Emperor and paint them with Mickey Mouse colors. Two of them have Mickey Mouse ears, and then the other one is just like they took the head off and put like a Mickey Mouse toy head on it.
I love this. It's great.
It's like a post-apocalyptic thing where like Mickey Mouse is like fighting with these guys, and they're like, "Hey, we're at Disney World though, so let's put on our ears because we love Disney." Wow.
Coming July 2022 from DC Comics.
I also found this fun image in the same Google search of Judy Hopps
Why?
And Nick dressed as Warhammer characters.
Why does Judy...
Furries are relentless.
Nick is kind of huge.
You look at the paw prints on Judy Hopps' tits and tell me that being a furry has nothing to do with a sex fetish.
No,
those look like camouflage paw prints.
That's camouflage.
You look at the paw prints on that rabbit's tits and tell me there's a god.
Okay.
Yes.
if you look at Nick, his like paw prints match his, but hers don't match hers. So that's not her paw prints.
Yeah, I think that is the
implication. They're her foot paw prints. They're rabbit foot.
Someone stood on them tits.
Her foot is way bigger. You can see her foot in the thing. It's like huge. Right?
Yeah, but her boobs aren't that big.
I have to send this to my writers group.
Yes, my first thought also was to curse more of my friends with this image.
Tell Stephen King we said hi.
Normally I was sending it to just one person in my writers group, and then she mentioned it to the others, and they're like, how come we're not involved? And that's actually not how that went. It was more like, hey, how come I don't involve you guys in this garbage? Guess what?
And the order doesn't matter, Chad, as long as you're sending them, you know, furry stuff regularly.
I have fun. I hope you guys are having fun.
I try my best. Did anybody... We got some comics to talk about that we've got queued up, but, you know, I see no reason to...
It's far too early to get into comic talk.
Yeah, exactly. But we do have some queued up, but did anybody else do anything? You know, did anybody else have some fun this week? Wow, love the silence there, guys.
I've been talking too much. Someone else talk.
Chad. No, Alex, you had no fun.
I did.
We watched anime, didn't we?
That's not fun.
We did watch anime.
I asked if you did anything fun, and I feel like this is not going to be fun. but by all means, go ahead.
That's a thing that we said last week that we were going to talk about this week. So I figure. I know that following up on things is not really the comics podcast's way, but I thought I'd do something new here by following up on something that we said we'd do this week.
We watched Yashahime.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you said that right, but I don't care enough to figure out which part of the word was wrong.
I don't care either. This show's not very good, Emily.
I mean, I think it's fine. I don't think it's good, but I don't think it's bad.
I think it's kind of bad. It's never quite as good as a good episode of Inuyasha, but it's consistently worse than a bad episode of Inuyasha.
The
one that came out last week, and everyone was really mad about all the implications and the dynamic between Sesshomaru and Rin, and those are bad things. But that was like that episode sucked for so many more reasons.
Yeah, I mean you're not wrong.
Episode.
I don't really get what Sesshomaru's deal is, like why, like I don't understand why he does the things that he does, like why he like I guess decides to marry Rin, but then also like doesn't give a shit about the babies being born, and then puts them in the forest, and then says it's cool if somebody burns the forest down.
I don't either, and I feel like they're trying to, because he's always been the mysterious character. But there was always, you could kind of tell what was going on in his mind, and he mostly just didn't care about the little things around him. But he had a goal. And I feel like all that's been removed, and instead of, like, having him basically be friends with Inuyasha, he had this huge character arc over the first series, and it's like, well, we need him to be a villain again, kinda, but not totally a villain, because obviously, like, well, we can't kill Inuyasha and Kokobi, but we can trap them in a jewel, which they did that to the Naraku and Kikyo in the first series, so, you know, no new ideas all around. And it just, none of the, None of that episode really made any sense. It was nothing but plot. None of the characters seemed to give a shit about anything going on.
I'm glad that you were also confused, or at least you also felt like it didn't make any sense, because I was like, I know I didn't watch all of the original series, but I'm very confused by what all is happening here. It's like we've gone so many episodes with barely any plot, and it's like, okay, now we're going to put all the plot in this one, and it's a big flashback.
Yup.
Yeah.
It was just frustrating, because it's like, I remember these characters, I feel like some of them don't feel like they're even being written consistently with how I would think they act. Like, this one felt so much like fan fiction, and I know that's been kind of an ongoing thing with our discussions, because
this show is fan fiction.
But it's like, this one really felt like it, though. This was like, I'm going to write my story, but it's, I'm lazy, so I'm only going to write 2,000 words, and I'm going to fit all this into, like, one thing. Like, there's like 4 episodes worth of plot in this episode. Meanwhile, the last 4 episodes had fucking no plot. It was just Monster of the Week shit. And it's like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah, it's, I don't really understand what they're going for with this series, but, I don't hate it as much as you do. I'm fine watching it. I just, don't understand a lot of the choices being made at this point. I think maybe they realize that they were meandering and tried to pick up the pace?
I don't know, and I almost kind of wish they would have just killed Inuyasha Kagome, because that would have at least been a statement.
Yeah, I actually agree with that.
Of course not. You know, it's like, oh, they're trapped, they're going to come back at some point, and then everyone's going to swing their sword, and all of the magic bullets are going to hit the bad guy, and the bad guy's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I do like the dude pulling the strings. That was basically talking to us at, you know, at the TV screen for a couple parts. He's fun.
I like him.
I think he's maybe one of the first times this series has had, like, a really maybe good villain. The other villains were fine.
Aside from the protagonists, he's really, like, the only character that actually, like, has some sort of personality or, like, more than two personality traits.
All the plot stuff with Kieran Mario were just really dumb.
Boring.
Stuff I could have guessed.
Yeah.
They're boring, yeah. Like, it would have been great if they woke him up and, like, all this happened. He's like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
What about the prophecy? I don't give a shit. And it's like, because you shouldn't. You're supposed to be one of these upper-level demons, and you piss on the earth, and you don't care, and you go about your day. And it's like, no, he's got to get involved in the drama. And it's like, but you're trying to make him seem cool.
Yeah, like, it's not very uninvolved to, like, want to engage in, like, I don't want to say genocide, but it is, like, they do hate specifically just half-demons just for being half-demons for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, like, you're not pure. And it's like, ooh, I don't like the phrasing of that.
Yeah, it was... There's just a lot wrong with this episode, and we don't have to go on too long, because I know Jean-Luc and Alex give zero fucks.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep watching the series, because I don't value my time, and I feel like I'm halfway through it. I might as well see
to the end.
But, yeah, it started off promising, and there's things I liked, and I just feel like the more it goes on now, the more there's less and less here for me, despite this being for me as, like, a audience, right? Like, I like the old show. I'm very, very nostalgic connection to it. I know it's not good, but I still enjoy it and the memories I have. And it's like, we can do that again. And they're fucking it up.
Yeah. The one thing I will say about the Rin thing is, like, I don't like it, but whatever. But, like, why does she still call him Lord Sesshomaru? Like, dog, you're his wife. Like, why are you calling him Lord?
Why didn't she care that she just stole their kids and was like, I'm taking these now?
Oh, and Lord Sesshomaru will do the right thing, I guess, even though he's never done the right thing before.
Pretty much, no. I mean, every once in a while he would do the right thing, but it was either because he was really backed into a corner or because it would, like, serve his purpose later on.
Mm-hmm.
But he's mostly just kind of a bitter asshole. He just doesn't open his mouth and talk about it, which is why he's one of the better characters.
Well, I guess
you know
that's
the show
it.
Is good when the characters that you're he's your favorite character because he doesn't talk and everybody else is not written well. And you're like, well, at least the silent guy can't fuck things up.
Is Sesshomaru your favorite Inuyasha character?
I have him on a t-shirt.
That's not, I mean, I think that might answer my question, but that wasn't an actual affirmative.
I feel like he was, but if I had to think about it, I might pick somebody else.
Yeah.
Because he's like got the least amount of character to him in a lot of ways. But there's just...
If you don't have any characterization, it can't be bad.
Right. Shippo was always pretty fun.
Also, fucking the subtitle just referring to Sango as Miroku's wife. That's all she is.
I feel so bad for her, and I never respected her that much, but I respect her more than the writers of this series do, and she's That's not true. Even my character.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess Anime Corner's over.
Anime Corner's over. We're going to back out of our corner.
Oh, wait, before we leave Anime Corner, Promise Neverland
God season... God damn it!
Real quick, Promise Neverland season 2 started, and it's really good so far.
I need to watch season 1.
So.
Maybe after this.
Yeah. It's good. It's better than this. It's way better than this.
Well, hey, I found a piece of coffee ground just stuck to my pants.
All right, we're good. Out of Anime Corner. Good.
So I've been watching Naruto.
Dude. Oh. No, I'm going on mute and looking at Twitter again. Bye, guys.
It's very quick, but we're in the Chunin exams right now, and they're doing their one-on-one fights, and it's lots of fun. And Rock Lee is a joy. He hasn't fought yet, but I'm kind of scared because the people who are left to fight against, I don't know if Rock Lee's gonna do well, especially if he's fighting against Gaara. So, really enjoy.
Oh, the Rock Lee Gaara fight is like one of the main highlights of that show.
Oh, so you are in for
really good one.
Yeah, no, because like going into it, I know nothing about Naruto, so just I have no idea who's fighting who, and it kind of adds to that too.
But I really love that you have gone into this, like, fresh as a spring baby, like, you know nothing about Naruto. It's very refreshing and delightful. I know very little about Naruto, but, like, I just love that you're going through it, like, no spoilers, no nothing.
Yeah, it's been lots of fun, and up until the Chunin exams, every episode has kind of felt like it could be 10 minutes shorter, because they just, like, flashback and are like... Remember what happened last episode? That really affected me personally. And I'm like, yeah, you told us that last episode when it affected you personally. But you know, it's been fun. It's been fun. And that's all the anime talk.
They had to pad it out back in those days.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I bought water this week, which Jean-Luc knows about. Yeah, it's called Liquid Death Mountain Water. It's the same thing that I think Cameron was talking about in Opinions of Chief a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, Cameron was talking about that.
Yeah, I was intrigued. I got a case, and it makes me appreciate drinking water more. I don't think I'll buy any more, but just like I didn't realize how much the packaging matters because it comes in like a beer can, and it's just like so much more satisfying, and it's like, hey, it just works nicely. I'm like, oh, and it's actually like something that is good for you. So it's like, huh, it's neato. It's brought me a lot of joy. Maybe I'll get more. Maybe I won't. But Jean-Luc, what is happening with your neck of the woods this week?
What did happen in my neck of the woods this week?
4 hours of public game.
You're going to get ready to do some Lego stuff.
I am, actually. Basically, as soon as we finish this podcast, I'm going to start... debut my Lego stream. But that hasn't happened yet, so
heck no.
I can't really say I don't have anything to really say about it, unfortunately.
Can you tease us with what sets are going to happen, even though by the time this
yeah posts, by the time this goes up, the VODs will be there for you. But today I'm going to do the 1999 Gungan sub set from The Phantom Menace.
I think I had that Lego set.
Yeah, it's a cool one. They did a remake of it a couple years ago that I feel like, in the same way a lot of contemporary Lego Star Wars stuff has, it feels too, almost too screen accurate. I love the old one. I'm really excited to build it because it was one of my favorite sets as a kid, and it's got this like really blocky Lego feel to it. It's really cool. And then I'm going to do Jedi Defense 1 and 2, which are these like little mini vignette sets from 2002. And then tomorrow I'm going to do a couple sets from the 2007 wave, which is sort of widely regarded as one of the best years for LEGO Star Wars. So tomorrow I'm going to do the Naboo Starfighter and Vulture Droid set. And haven't decided if I'm going to do the AT-ST or the Y-Wing from that year yet. I'm leaning towards the AT-ST, but I may do the Y-Wing. And save the AT-ST for when the pieces for the 1999 AT-ST come in, so I can do them together and sort of do like a comparison. But we'll see.
So are you ordering fill-in pieces, or are you ordering a full set?
No, I have the set. It's just that most of the sets that I have, there's like a couple pieces that are missing. So I have to do replacements for not every set. But most sets, it'll be like, oh, there's like this piece that is in like a weird color, and the set calls for two of them, and I lost one. Or the set calls for, in the case of one of my sets, 18 of them. and I have 17, but I can't for the life of me find the 18th one anywhere, so I have to replace it. And there have been pieces like that for most sets, just because, like, especially the early sets, because they have been moved across three continents, four continents. Yeah. So pieces went missing, and also there was a tendency in the early 2000s in LEGO Star Wars to use hyper-specific printed pieces that were then never reused because they were specific to the sets they were in, which is nice because they're cool pieces and you don't have to apply stickers, but also kind of sucks because there's a relatively limited quantity of them. But anyway, I don't want to bore you guys with LEGO talk
just
too much.
Where do you order them? And like, how expensive is it to replace pieces? Is it like a...
Depends on the piece. Mm-hmm. There's a online marketplace called Bricklink, which is basically like a collection of... for people who are in the like TCG world, it's similar to like TCG Player, where a bunch of individual stores will like put up their storefronts there, and then you can like look through all the different listings and select the pieces you need. Pieces are generally really cheap. Like, even some of the more specific ones like won't run you more than like $3 to $4. But on the high end, you can get pieces that are, you know, anywhere from like the $30 to $50 range. An example of that is the 1999 Ultimate Collector Series Naboo Starfighter, or not? I think it's from 2001 actually. Which has these like chrome, like these metallic chrome pieces, yeah. That go for about $25 a pop. So I'm not looking forward. I have that set and I have almost all of the pieces, but I'm not looking forward to the day when I spend $50 to buy the two missing pieces from that set that are Jesus. In that color. But I'm gonna hold off on that for a while, I think. But I mean, yeah, it's generally not that expensive. It probably when all said and done, it will probably average out to like I ended up spending like less than 50 cents per set I rebuild on new pieces.
That's not bad.
Because it's really like, and a lot of pieces are like common enough that like you just end up with a bunch of them, or you end up with them through replacement pieces. So you know, for each set you're like replacing, you know, or getting like 3 to 4 new pieces, and they're each like 3 cents each, and then occasionally you get one that's like you know, $2 to $3 or something. And I'm glad that like I haven't run into a set where I'm missing, like I said, missing probably more than 5 pieces. So that has been nice.
Cool. Rad.
But yeah, that's I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to bore people with talking about LEGO too much. I haven't really been up to much else this week, just working.
Classic work.
Yeah. I mean, I watched the Fellowship of the Ring extended cut for the first time in like 10 years yesterday.
Oh, shit.
But how was that?
I watched the Twin Towers yesterday as well. I mean, that's nice. A movie, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have any. I mean, I like it. It's good.
Yeah.
It's that movie that I liked when I was a teenager that I still like now. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really have like anything to say about it, really. It holds up.
We have something topical that we could bring up.
We do?
Yeah. WandaVision has come out.
Oh, yeah. Alex and I had this conversation already.
I know that John doesn't like it because I follow him on Twitter. But I feel like it could be a conversation that we could have on the show real quick.
It's not good.
It is technically comics adjacent.
Folks, it's bad.
Did you guys watch Riverdale this week?
Hell yeah, brother. No, fuck.
I forgot it was coming. If I forgot it came out.
See, that I would actually talk about, but I didn't even think Alex would have seen it by now.
I have. But we can talk about it next week. We'll talk about the one day vision.
Okay, so...
I'll let you guys... I said I don't like it. I'll just let you guys talk about it because I don't want to... I already shit on Alex earlier this week and made fun of him for being a mark.
Alex, tell me why you like WandaVision, because I think both of us have said that we like it.
Yeah, so I've seen the first two episodes. I think there's a third one out.
I haven't watched the third one yet either.
Okay, cool. I'm enjoying WandaVision because it's like, hey, it's a new episode of Bewitched. From, like, you know, and that's a show that I grew up watching. I think it was like six seasons, but I was watching it a lot. My mom, I think, watched it when we were, when she was growing up and stuff. It was live on TV, and it was like, oh, it was a show she liked. She introduced it to us. So I have a lot of nostalgia for those kind of shows. And, I don't really care about the big mystery or the overarching thing, because it's like, hey, she's a psychic or a mentalist. It was probably, like, in her mind or some sort of stuff like that. I just kind of like that it was an episode of like a 50s and 60s or 60s sitcom in the first two.
I like sitcoms, and I like that they're very clearly like pulling from like specific influences like Bewitched, and like it makes me think of like I Love Lucy kind of, and I like the aesthetic of it all, and I don't really care. I care about the plot in that, like, I'm like, oh, huh, what's going on? There's clearly something happening here. But I'm not really worried about what direction it's going in. I'm not, like, I don't have any, like, theories yet. But then again, I haven't seen the third episode yet, so I don't know how that would impact my feelings there. But I don't know. I think that I like the dynamic of the two of them, like, just trying to, like, live in these little sitcom worlds and not reveal that they are people with superpowers or robot powers. And I just think, I don't know, it's cute. It's fun.
Yeah, and then at the same time, I've seen the first two episodes, and then I've just been on Twitter, and people are like, oh, all the characters that you've met in WandaVision so far and how they tie into the Marvel Universe, and when does this take place? And I'm like, oh god, I don't care about any of this.
See, yeah, but, I don't give a shit about any of that. I just like this fun, cute little show, and I'm interested to see the direction that it takes.
Yay!
So, John, you just don't vibe with it?
Yeah, it's not good.
Okay.
Sitcoms, we left that style of sitcoms in the 50s for a reason. And that reason is that they're bad.
Well, I mean, it leaves that style after, like, the first few episodes, and because it's going to be going through different eras of sitcom style.
Can't wait until it's more like Friends and Seinfeld, shows that also suck.
You're kind of making me want to watch this.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, Chad, if that's your thing,
it's just the most cynical nostalgia bait bullshit. And it's not even nostalgia for something that was good. Like, it's nostalgia for bad acting and bad jokes, but whatever. People are entitled to like what they like.
I feel like someone didn't grow up with Nick at Night, and it shows.
It's true. He didn't.
I didn't really grow up watching sitcoms. I mean, I saw episodes of some sitcoms here and there growing up from, like, a multitude of eras, and I never particularly latched onto them or wanted to, like, felt a desire to watch them more. So.
And now you're a bitterly unhappy man.
Yeah, but not for that reason.
No, I feel like this is causation and correlation and other words that start with C.
This is like why Chad doesn't like Warrior Cats is because, like he oh, doesn't fuck. Have oh, any Warrior attachment Cats. To it. So wow. That's all I've done this week. So I can't really talk about anything else. I was sitting here this whole time trying to think about what the fuck did I do this whole week? And it's just, read the cat books. But it's because, like, Chad didn't read them as a kid and has no, like, attachment to the concept or the style or the aesthetic. Like, trying to read it now is just sort of like, okay.
I read The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman instead.
You did.
And goddamn, was it nice to read a book by adults for adults. Like, it legitimately made writing my current project easier. I was like, oh, I needed this so hard. Yeah, maybe sometimes I'll try Warrior Cats one day, Emily, but probably not.
No, because I'm just going to do an episode of this podcast where I just tell you a bunch of shit about Warrior Cats. It'll be great.
Oh, yeah, we did joke about doing an off episode like that, and I agreed to do it if I could get drunk.
That'll be great.
I think it's possible.
Yeah, that works too. We want to talk about comic books?
Yeah, before we do, I just want to say that...
Oh, God.
don't worry, it's a mini-golf update. It's got nothing to do with anime nor WandaVision. But I've been quite enjoying the quest, too. Like, I'm playing a lot of Beat Saber just, like, whenever I have, like, 10 minutes of time, and I played some mini-golf this morning, and it was like, oh, it's mini-golf. Lovely. So...
It's fun inviting Mario. You into our VR chat escapades, Alex.
They do be fun. They do be fun. Weird, but fun.
We went to a comedy room the other day. This was last week now. And there was a guy on stage playing guitar, and it was a social room, which don't run for shit on my end. They all the avatars about coming in and out. It messes with me, but... We were kind of poking around trying to figure out what to do, and this person in a scooter with a Scootaloo avatar kept following us around trying to talk to us. And I was just, like, pointedly ignoring him because I did not know what to do, and it seemed like no one else in our group gave a shit either.
It seems like you've managed to capture the anime convention experience in VR.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, my mic, I think my chat settings were on, like, safety, so I couldn't even see anyone else. So we went to, like, the comedy club, and I was like, oh, there's nobody here. Okay, nice. Nice.
You know, that place was pretty packed with weirdos, and then the guy on the stage, he was singing in Spanish and playing an acoustic.
Huh.
And he was pretty good. That was kind of fun.
Huh. Well.
I know it's funny, because you went on stage at one point, because I think Cameron was like, say something funny, and then you ran away. And, like, one of the other strangers was like, way to go, you dick, you scared him. They didn't know you were in our group.
Cause I, like,
or
I,
that
I,
you couldn't see anybody.
Yeah, I guess they could hear me, but I couldn't see anyone. I couldn't hear anyone. And I was like, I was leaving to, like, reset, but I literally wanted to run. So it was,
yeah, that was really funny.
Try it again this week, but there's a lot of comics, right?
Yeah,
yeah, there were a decent number of comics that came out this week. I don't know where people want to start, if there's anything that jumps out at people as, like, a good starting point. But I feel like there were some more number ones, and not only, you know, DC number ones, but some number ones for other publishers. So that seems like as good a place to start as any, with, you know, a couple of those. Sure. Alex, I know you and I read Future State Catwoman number one.
We did.
You want to start off there?
So it was Future State last week, I think I read, was it 14 for the show? And I was just like, yeah. I probably didn't give them a fair shake because I was reading 14 in one day, but for the most part, I found them dismal, like abysmal.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I don't think that reading them, like, I, as someone who read them one per day, I don't think it would have made a difference.
Yeah, which is why I was surprised because I think this is a book by Ram V.
Written,
and it, when I messaged Jean-Luc, I'm like, it really has Batman Beyond vibes, and that was sort of like a stylistic thing. But it's just sort of like this, did I write notes? It's got like a fun anti-establishment vibe. It's got likable background characters. It's all that. And then the art is by Otto Schmidt, who,
yeah,
remember from Green Arrow, which I don't know why I messaged saying, hey, Jen Bartel is doing Wonder Woman. And then I was like, I'll also read Catwoman. I didn't mention Otto Schmidt, but I didn't. And his art is just so nice. And it's nice in a book that, like, the writing is good.
Well,
and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, so the last time, and he may have had a project between now and then, but the last time I saw Otto Schmidt art was at the beginning of Green Arrow's Rebirth run.
Was that Benjamin Percy?
Benjamin Percy, yeah, and it is really nice to see him paired with a writer who doesn't drown his art in text boxes, because he has a, not, it's like, DC House style adjacent, but like a little bit more cartoony, which I feel like is kind of where some of those Batman Beyond vibes come from. Also, the futuristic setting definitely helps there. The sort of like more technologically, like more advanced technologically minded Catwoman, or interpretation of Catwoman. And all of that sort of does give it a, I think the Batman Beyond comparison that you made is really apt. And surprisingly, not something that I thought that we thought of at all, for the first two weeks, I should say, of, DC Rebirth, or not Rebirth, God, Rebirth, DC Future State books, because it's very clear that I think some of those Batman books are trying to, in retrospect, are trying to do the Batman Beyond thing. And this is the first one that's successful. It's just a, it's like an action packed, well written, enjoyable superhero comic. And, you know, there's credit. You got to give it credit where credit's due. Like, I say I want fun, simple stories from superhero comics, and this one delivered one that's well written and well drawn. So it's kind of what I want.
Yay!
Yeah, for sure. And it's just like, I feel like the other Batman ones, and I don't know if you read this. I hope you didn't, John. But
I read this in Wonder Woman.
Yeah, no, but just comparing the other Batman books and what they're trying to do, it feels a lot like it's what was that event that had like Brian Azzarello, Jeff Lemire? It was like 52 issues, really bad.
Future's End.
Yeah. So it feels like they're aiming for Batman Beyond, but hitting Future's End, and it's just like bad.
That is a really great description.
But like Catwoman, I hope this is the creative team when we actually get these books, because it's hard to tell.
It's a good creative team. Like
two issue sort of bops, but hopefully Ram V and Otto Schmidt team up with Catwoman, because this is lots of fun.
Yeah. And I guess we can sort of knock out the other one, which was Immortal Wonder Woman, which is another one with a couple stories in one issue. And Emily, you read this, right?
I did. Jen Bartel did the interiors on this too, right?
Yeah, she did the interiors, not just the cover art.
I don't always like her sequential art. I feel like she just like shines better when like doing like big mock-ups or variant covers or whatever, but I liked the art in this issue. I feel like she's getting better at doing sequential art now that she's done a couple of comics now.
She did what was it called? Blackbird?
Blackbird, yeah.
Yeah, I know. I didn't read that, and you guys said you hated it, so...
Not really because of the art, more so Sam Humphrey's writing, but...
Yeah, it didn't really have anything to do with Jen Bartel.
That's fair.
And I say that as someone who's, like, not the biggest Jen Bartel fan.
I know.
Yeah.
But,
what was that book about again? I don't remember.
It was, like, something about, like, a grandma, and she was, like, floating, or they abandoned their grandmother or something, because there was an earthquake or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that one.
Yeah,
that one sucked.
It was. Chad.
Go ahead, Emily.
Well, no, Alex, did you have something else to say before I get back to Immortal Wonder Woman?
I feel like you hit the nail on the head with Immortal Wonder Woman. Where you're talking about it, where you're like Jen Bartel is I think she's a really good cover artist, and she shines there. And I didn't really like. I started reading this book and kind of started skimming because the writing wasn't that great. In my opinion, and then
I feel like not great is an understatement, buddy.
Yeah,
thought that I did not really care for the writing in the first story, but I really like this specific design for Wonder Woman, so I want to give that credit. I thought I liked like the gray streak in her hair, and I thought it was cute. But no, the first story was kind of dumb, and I did also skim it.
It's really hard to give a shit about like post-apocalyptic Wonder Woman stories, like especially when they're bad, but when Wonder Woman Dead Earth exists, like all of this just feels fucking juvenile. Like the Dark Side stuff sucks.
As soon as she put on Batman's belt, I was like, oh, they did this in Wonder Woman Dead Earth.
I know, that way I had that same thing. It's like, oh, Batman's here. And then when they had Superman, the old Superman show up, I'm like,
Is this an homage? Or like
this is an homage to that thing that came out
like in December, November last year. Like is that even possible? But Jen Bartel sequentially, I don't think that she's the strongest artist. But there were like certain scenes and certain things where like the colors were so strong and like it was just like,
oh,
oh that's a cool
the
Wonder
colors
Woman shot.
Were off the charts, I feel like. But she
yeah,
is
the color work
is
good.
This is better than the last time that I read a Jen Bartel comic. So yeah. I guess at least she's getting better, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I liked the second story kind of. I mean, I didn't love it, but like I kind of once we switched gears over to new Wonder Woman, I actually kind of cared more about what she had going on, I guess.
I liked the opening of this. Like the there's that the opening in the museum I thought was like
yes.
decent, was pretty decent. Where she's fighting Grail. Yeah. Who, you know, real heads will remember from Dark Side War.
Yeah, Dark Side War, let's go.
No, let's fucking go, baby. After that I thought the book just got progressively worse. There's like there's a lot of it that's very overwritten, and I just started my eyes glazed over and I started skimming.
Yeah.
And about
like I cared
the point
more about
where
the concept
she,
than the actual part where it
right.
actually went places.
Yeah, at about the point where she like goes into the back of the bar or the club and meets up with her aunt, I kind of stopped caring.
Yeah,
like it's just not. It's just like classic, you know, DC first issue bullshit where it's like you'd be better off just skipping it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, like
in my opinion, but
like check out the actual series maybe when it comes out, but also maybe like depending who's writing it or
yeah, we'll
writing
see.
It too. Yeah,
I would assume these are mostly going to keep the same creative teams when the series.
I mean, like is Rand V going to write every single book? Like,
is yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
We'll see.
We're Scott Snyder,
I mean,
folks.
I actually, yeah, that is a name that is notably absent from a lot of these.
Like,
well, I guess he's still writing. He's still doing all the metal shit because that's not.
Is James Tynion? I think he had one book or something. I don't know. Or no, I guess he's doing Image stuff too now. Who knows? But it does seem like they're missing like a lot of their A-list people, and these are all like new people, which is cool.
Well, that's the point, right?
Yeah.
Like that was the whole point of the Future State.
But whether it actually goes into the actual series and see what they do with that, but
yeah.
Oh, should we mention the bubble error in Immortal Wonder Woman?
Yeah, I don't know what was up with that. But for some reason, they thought it was acceptable to print a comic where the dialogue from page one ended up being transposed over a page
yeah.
a few pages later.
It has the effect where the security guard who's been like attacked by the evil person is like, don't attack me. And then it also says, I'm going to attack you. And it's like, what? Is she two people in one? It's neat. It's neat.
I read that page over like three times before it occurred to me that they weren't just trying to like mirror the dialogue from the previous page and that it was in fact entirely just the same
yeah.
like
if,
layer. Because it
if
had
it was
the,
Tom King, yeah.
It had the, like, where it said the name of the museum, and that was where I was like, oh, no, this is just a straight-up goof.
Yeah.
It is. If it was Tom King, I'd be like, he's doing this on purpose and trying to be pretentious, but it wasn't, so.
Yeah, if it was Tom King, we'd be critiquing it we'd be mad about it for different reasons. For this one, it's just like, yeah, probably just a printing error.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dad, did you read the Tom King book this week?
I did read the Tom King book
this
week.
Oh, fuck, I read the Tom King book this week. Well,
shit.
One of them. There's two.
Oh, my. Batman Catwoman?
Oh, I read that.
I feel like this could be an interesting Batman Catwoman story if it was told in a manner that wasn't, like, purposefully confusing or dragged out.
Yep.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I like the idea of, like, old lady Catwoman going to go kill old man Joker, and maybe Batman's dead, and, like, I think there's a legitimately neat story there, and I don't think this is it. But
you
I'll
know,
keep reading it.
I think there's a good one shot there.
Yeah,
but this shit is
yeah.
12 issues.
Oh.
Well, and there's like the stuff with what's her name? Phantasm.
The Phantasm.
Lady. And it's just it's just not coherent in what's going on. It's like, okay, like she's obviously taking revenge on these people. As she sort of did in the anime movie where she was in the first time, but like, do you read this stuff and get any value out of it? Where you're like, I feel satisfied. Like there's no satisfying moment yet, and there's nothing to be like, go on to the next issue other than hey, Tom King's writing this. It's 12 issues. Maybe he'll pull it out. Who knows?
I think there's supposed to be some thematic through lines between all the different eras, right? Where the moral of the story is that, you know, Batman is trying to stop all these people who are, like, you know, nominally on his side from, you know, crossing the line and killing people. Yeah. Right. Like, that to me is like where what the connective tissue seems to be, but it's not really compelling connective tissue. At least not yet, because, like, you could tell an interesting story about, hey, maybe we should like interrogate, Batman's no killing rule and, you know, think about it in a way, in the futility of it and all, even from a moral standpoint, the futility of it. But
the
problem is that even in a normal series where you would start introducing that in like the second or third issue, the problem is that we're not even out of the first issue really, because it's like there's four stories going on.
Yep.
That aside from that connective tissue, or I guess in this one, maybe there's only two or three, but it's like purposefully meant to confuse you, which is,
and it'll be better for a monthly thing,
it doesn't work. That, like,
yeah,
for the four, it just doesn't work with the format. Like, yeah, you can sit here and say maybe it'll read better in trade, and maybe it will read better in trade, and then release it as a fucking trade.
But you're like, still gonna have to go through 80 pages of stuff where you're like, what the fuck's going on? I'm not really enjoying this, to get to it. And I mean, maybe the payoff will be worth it, but I mean, if the first two issues were good, then that's better than this is what we're getting here. So
yeah, I'm with you there. Emily, did you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I feel like there's a way to do this, like, back and forth, like, between the two different, like, parts of the story, but reading this, like, kind of gave me a headache. Like, this just does not pull off what it's trying to do, and I feel like it almost feels like a pitch for another one of those that feels almost like a pitch for an HBO show.
Yep. Yeah. My man needed to read AD After Death by Jeff Lemire.
And nobody else.
And yeah.
Let's be real.
To learn how to do that structure well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or even like what they did with Rucka and Rucka did with Wonder Woman, where like the different issues were the different eras, so you get like a cohesive story, and that, yeah, obviously that might make it wear a little thin in what Tom King's trying to do, but yeah.
I feel like that doesn't work on the month-to-month release schedule the same way it does
bi-monthly,
bi-weekly, or whatever release schedule.
Yeah.
But bottom line, Tom King can't write comics. I'm lucky. Emily, you're still reading Rorschach. Did that actually come out this week, or were you just catching up? I
thought it came out this week.
Oh, well, that was not a rhetorical question. That was an actual question, because I'm not reading it anymore.
I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read a Rorschach comic. I read number 4 because I thought everyone else was still reading Rorschach. So I read it, and
I'm sorry we've done this to you.
I mean, it's not very good, and it's kind of dumb. And
is it exciting?
Oh boy! But since
something happened,
since none of you have read it, I get to tell you what happens. So apparently, you remember how, like, I have this problem where the moment I finish reading this book, I forget everything that's happened. It's because it's very bad. But you know how, like, the girl's dad had these delusions of, like, people with, like, the squids in their brains?
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
And then he had.
Let's say that I did know that. Let's say I remember that.
Pretend that you remember that, like, the girl or whatever, like, her dad had this conspiracy theory about the squids mind controlling people, and he passed this on to her. Sure. And she has grown up to be in a circus, and she meets a circus strongman, and she convinces him of her theory that the reason that there are no Watchmen superheroes anymore is because Dr. Manhattan split up everybody's bodies and souls and put the souls of the, split up the atoms of all the superhero people, or the hero people, and put their souls into other people so that the squids couldn't find them and mind control them. And she's convinced that the circus strongman is actually Rorschach, and he has Rorschach's soul in his body. So she convinces him to dress up like Rorschach, and they go around killing people. And then he ends up getting caught and put in jail. And while he's being interrogated in the jail, they find out that she did it to another person, and now she's dead too.
What the fuck?
Neat.
Cool.
I mean, yeah.
I'm going to retain none of that.
That's more than half in the first 2 issues. I'm surprised
that I did.
Yeah.
Like, that, at least something happened. I mean, it was stupid, but...
Yeah, it's really stupid.
Nothing happens, and then when stuff does happen, it's incredibly dumb. Awesome.
Oh, I forgot I read Nightwing Future State, and I only bring it up because there was a moment where I'm like, wow, they're making a really good joke about, like, how most comic writers can't write comics. And it was like, it starts off and Nightwing saves some people from the evil sort of like state-controlled robots, and their dialogue is kind of terrible. And they're like, thank you, Nightwing. We would love to shake your hand now. And then Nightwing like throws a metal stick at their head, and they're like, you're clearly not human. And I was like, oh, clearly not human because they're not written well. And he's like, your body language is all wrong. And I was like, shit. And then the rest of the book's really bad dialogue.
Great. We should talk about... even though it's technically not new, we should talk about Universe a little bit, I think, because...
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was really good. Also, so, we're 53 minutes.
Yeah, so we... Did everybody... I guess I should ask. So this is a trade that collects, for the first time in physical form, 6 webcomics from the Universe world. I read all of this morning because I was very enraptured in it, but I don't know how far the rest of y'all ended up getting with it.
I read 1 issue.
Okay, that's fair.
I did the first, the second, and then Chad said the last one was really good, so I read the last one. But I'm fully going to go back and read the other 3.
And Chad, you read all of it?
I read all of it. All
right, cool. Well, I mean, we can sort of focus on the first issue then, since that's the one that we've all read. Which is, I was really, like I said, really taken by this. Kind of sad in a way that I hadn't read it before, like when it was initially coming out. Mm-hmm. But it's like just really good, sort of like mind-bending science fiction.
It's a really nice comedy bent to it.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's some like serious concepts in here for sure. Like there's a lot of good stuff going on about, you know, the nature of corporate power. Considering the concept is that this corporation wants to use time travel to go back to send someone back to right before the Big Bang. And inscribe that company's copyright mark onto all of the atoms in the universe, or something like that.
Yeah, that's but exactly. Like,
yeah, and so there's obviously, you know, obviously there is a commentary in there, but just on its face, the concept is so absurd, and the writing like rightfully treats it that way, because the rest of the issue is largely this guy who they send back in time. Living out the 17 million years in between the Big Bang and returning to the future.
It's so. Billion.
Billion, yes, yes. Not million.
And he gets home and he's like, it's been a long day. It's like,
yeah.
That's an understatement, dude.
That was great. And like his boss is like, oh, don't worry, for us it'll only be 30 minutes. And he's like, but for me it'll be, okay, all right, nice.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good stuff in here. He changes the course of history, I guess, by giving ants a degree of sentience.
I love his ant creatures.
Which is great. They go through history, him and this little robot, you know, putting the company logo in a bunch of different places where it doesn't belong. Which is that there's a really great page that is like 12 panels, and each of them is like a different point in history that he's shown up, and sort of manipulated the course of history, which is really cute and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then a fucking fantastic punchline at the end.
Oh,
of it.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it's great.
I also love that the CEO of this company, he's just like, so he was dead, but he's not anymore. But he's like a head in a in this like fish jar, basically. And he has this mechanism that is sort of reminiscent of Emperor Palpatine in The Rise of Skywalker. But they constantly project a hologram of like a suit and tie below it with like human hands and legs.
It's so good.
Which is very good that he like emotes with, well, even though he's only a head, they have that hologram projection. And he's a character that shows up in a couple of the other issues collected in here, and it's the same thing every time, and I think that is just a fantastic bit. Little nice, like, nice touch of humor.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
I love at the end, like, because he's like, we can do this, but it'll take a third of the world's resources. And then he comes back, and he's like, yeah, Australia just, like, vanished, you know, just gone. And, yeah. It's like, we can do it once, we could technically do it twice, but you know, we'd have to like sell that one kind of thing. Yeah, the dig at like giant corporations, and this is so fun.
Oh man, yeah, and the punchline's so good. I don't want to spoil it. Like, just check it out. It's Universe. Is it Universe number one or is it just Universe? Because the collection.
It's so Universe.
It's Universe with an exclamation point. Is the name of the trade? Written and drawn by Albert Montes. Presumably available now. In comic book stores near you.
Have you guys read anything by him before? I think this is my first experience with his writing.
I have inadvertently, because I was reading the backup to but in place of like, you know, the essay that people put in the end, sometimes he has these like, this little strip of like, he draws himself and like basically all the content that would be in that essay is in there. And apparently he did some work on Private Eye with Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin. Which was a web comic. This also came out on Panel Syndicate, which is where Private Eye came out as well.
Right.
So I guess unknowingly, it seems like I've read his stuff before. I've read Private Eye. But I didn't recognize the name. No. But now it is something that I'll be looking out for, and you know, I want to know if this guy has like more web comics or something, because what is here is an absolute, like, all six issues are a delight, and that maybe, you know, on future episodes we can talk about some of the other ones as Chad and Emily read them all.
Also, apparently, last year he did an adaptation of Slaughterhouse-Five, written by Ryan North, he did the illustration for it.
I didn't read. That's another thing that, like, I haven't read that, but I have heard of that project. I did not realize that he drew it. That's cool.
I was seeing if I had heard of anything else that he had done, and that was down there at the bottom of the list. So
yeah,
Did anybody read Stillwater number 5?
No,
no,
no.
I feel like this one is maybe like a good turning point in this series where it's So the issue is that they got enough people in the Hound to maybe vote to let other people into town and like expand and just be like, we can't keep, you know, being this insular community. It's not good for us. But we're largely, you know, just, we're a democratic town, or so we say. So we'll put it to a vote, and the main guy who runs can't say no to that. And of course he says no to that. And that's how it ends, is he says no, and like the police officers all pull their guns and just start shooting everybody, because it's not like they can die. So I feel like we're finally getting to a bit more of like world building political stuff with this, that it's always had some of that, but it feels like it's finally taking that into a plot driven direction instead of just things going on. I kind of enjoyed this issue. I'm curious to see maybe where this goes, especially since it seems like some of the more bad guys have ties to the military and killers for hire and whatnot, so it might finally take like a good turn. And I haven't like hated this comic. It's just like there's been parts that have been fairly boring, and I feel like this is the first issue that I was like, this was really engaging. I enjoyed reading this.
That's good to hear. It's one of the things that I sort of went into today meaning to read, and then it got closer and closer to the time where we were recording, and just slipped off the list. But hearing you're enthusiastic about it actually does make me want to circle back and
and read it.
Cool. Well, I read one more thing, which is something that that was released last year, but I guess is now coming out in paperback. But it's Pulp by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, the creative team behind. It is also in the Criminal universe, I should say. So same universe as things like Cruel Summer and all the rest of the Criminal stuff. And I really enjoyed this. I mean, obviously, it's a creative team with a lot of with a really, really strong track record. So I'm not surprised that I enjoyed it. But it's a sort of a nice little story. It's basically the length of, I guess, two issues of an average comic book series, like 70 pages long. But it's a nice little story about this, you know, ex cowboy who, you know, was a bandit in the West at the turn of the century. And then has now moved to New York in the 1930s and become a comic book writer. And it's sort of about him at the end of his life. He's had a couple heart attacks and doesn't really recognize the world around him anymore. And he gets pulled in for one last job, which is to fuck up the burgeoning Nazi movement. In New York City in the 1930s, and it's a really affecting story. It's a really good story about him coming to terms with what is the end of his life and getting everything in order and going out on his own terms in a way that I found to be like really, really moving. The last 20 pages or so of this, 15 to 20 pages, I found really affecting, as he sort of figures out in the end, like comes to terms with everything and realizes what he has to do and what you got to do to Nazis, which is shoot them in the head with a sawed off.
Yay.
But yeah, it's really fantastic. I would highly recommend that you guys go back and check it out, especially considering that I know all three of you have liked Brubaker Phillips collaborations in the past, so I feel like this is something that can bang out in like half an hour, 45 minutes in an afternoon, and is a really enjoyable little story.
Sounds lovely.
Cool. I meant to read it and then went and got paint and coffee grounds all over me instead.
The only other book I read was Abbott. Did you guys read Abbott?
I did read Abbott 1973.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, I did read this. I liked it.
Yay!
Yeah, the sequel to one of my favorite books from a couple 2017 or 2018, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shit's really good. This was a really good start to the new stuff. I love, obviously, like the setting and the context that they're telling stories in. It's still about, you know, this African American woman like reporter in, you know, late 20th century Detroit, which is a phenomenal setting. And they use a lot of that again really, really well. The supernatural stuff is still here, obviously, after the end of Abbott. And I wish that it didn't play as large of a role, but
there's enough dangers and intrigue in her life that like, that's the interesting part of this issue.
Yeah.
Like this, like those shadowy figures could still be there, just not have like powers, right? Like they could just be like, hey,
yeah,
you know, yeah. It kind of serves the same thing, but. I'm pretty sure that's the exact same thing you said about the first Abbott, so.
It is. I mean, I absolutely love that the sequence of like pages 2 and 3 where they reintroduce those characters. And it's like very cloudy and distorted, and I love the art and the visuals on that goes along with them. But I feel like the story of her, you know, reporting on the potential election of the first black mayor of Detroit is there's enough meat there for a compelling story. And you know, you get her like relationship with her girlfriend and with the dynamic between her and like the rest of the reporters that she works with. Like there's a lot there. And similarly to this first Abbott, like I love the first Abbott, like one of my favorite, like I said, it was one of my favorite books that came out that year. But this one is sort of it's more of that in both the good and the bad ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad to have it back. I'm glad we're getting more stories with this character. And Emily, this is your, I guess, probably your introduction to Abbott.
Yeah, so I had not heard of this, and I saw it was a number one, so I was going to read it. And then I Googled it, And it said it, the, like, Google said it was a sequel. So I was like, maybe I won't read this. But then Alex said that he thought I might like it. So I read it and I really liked it. It was not difficult to, it was not difficult to jump on at all. I agree that I feel like there is enough there for this to just be like a normal, like, set in the human world with interpersonal conflicts comic. So I'm interested to see how the supernatural stuff is gonna play out. But I liked this issue, so I'm excited for future issues.
And I should also say, if you get the chance, the first series is only 5 issues long.
Okay.
And I would highly recommend it a lot. I think might like a lot out. Of the things that you liked about this are all present there as well. So I think you would probably dig it.
Yeah, I had just never heard of it before. But I like, who's the guy that writes this?
Saladin Akhmed?
Yeah, I've liked his comics in the past. I recognized his name.
Mr. Miles Morales. Yeah,
writer of Miles Morales Spider-Man, mm-hmm. the best Marvel comic 3 years running.
I mean,
also the only good Marvel comic 3 years running. So, you know,
like, I'm trying to think of another Marvel comic that I've read in the last 3 years and liked.
House of X and Powers of 10.
Oh, actually, yeah, then yeah. That's 2, yeah. Actually, so.
Yeah, it's too bad that the books that spun out of that did not hold my attention. But, you know, those issues were good.
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Well, I think that's all the comics that, you know, we as a collective read this week that we wanted to talk about. And with that, we can wrap it up. We've been a little over an hour, so, you know, gotta make Chad's life tomorrow a little harder. But you can find us all online. You can follow the Comics Podcast on Twitter, find us on Facebook, all that good stuff. You can find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Mountain Dew Liker. You can find my Twitch stream there. Although by the time you see this, it'll be too late, but I'll be streaming again next weekend. Yeah. You can find Emily on Twitter at mpandanata. Listen to her other podcasts, Fresh Podcast Market, Imagine Me and Yurikuma, Big Steppy. There's some content out there. You can find Alex at Alex Hanziak. You can read his writing at cgmagonline.com, and you can read his other tweets and posts on the Roller Coaster Tycoon socials. And you can check out Chad at anonymband on Twitter. Anonym.wordpress.com, anonym.bandcamp.com, lots of places to find Chad's very good work. You can buy his books, The Ninth Life and Dreamscape.
Yay!
Unfortunately, exclusively on Amazon.com, but, you know, we do what we got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that. Any closing thoughts?
Live?
No.
Check out the stream that's happening in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody.
Fuckers. Oh, yeah, brother.
Bye.
All right. Talk
Bye,
to you
everybody.
Bye.